On the programme, return to the presence of dance, the 10th Dublin Dance Festival. Hello and welcome to Arts Tonight. This year's Dublin Dance Festival is a special one, marking its 10th anniversary, though the festival began as a biannual one back in 2002. Since then, it has gone from strength to strength, fostering new Irish work and young dance companies here, and bringing some of the best of international dance to Irish audiences. This year's programme is a rich mix of Irish and international, of high energy and slow reflection. The work of Samuel Beckett features in two new pieces. Six Irish choreographers premiere new work. There's Dance on the Street in the Abbey Theatre, the annual Representing Ireland Forum, Dance on Film, and Dance Just About Everywhere. Tonight, we look at what's coming up in the festival, hear from many of those involved, celebrate the energy and focus of contemporary dance in Ireland in a time of challenging funding cuts, and hear about the National Dance Archive at the University of Limerick. Joining me in studio are Julia Carruthers, Director of the Dublin Dance Festival, Shona McRaymon, dance critic and dance historian Deirdre Mulrooney. Julia Carruthers, a pretty packed programme. This year, of course, a special one for the festival and your third year at the helm. Tell me about what you've programmed for this 10th anniversary festival.
Yes, it's my third festival now and I like to think I'm on a bit of a roll. And we've certainly got a jam-packed schedule for people coming up. 10th birthday, we wanted to celebrate. We wanted to create a sense of occasion. So particular pieces of work have been hand-picked, you know, to have a big impact. We've got a lot of work happening outdoors. A lot of work that is very engaging and, to use that terrible word, accessible. I'm always asked every festival, what's the theme of this year's festival? And that's a question I always sidestep because I don't tend to do a theme kind of thing. And after the festival, someone like Michael Seaver will come up with a brilliant idea for what the theme was. And I think, oh, yes, that's a good one. I could have said that. We're trying to look at dance across the spectrum. There's a lot of different things happening under the umbrella that might be called dance, use of text, different kinds of collaborators involved. So there's a wide range of work on offer. It's this, you know, the something for everyone approach.
And I think it's fair to say that there's probably possibly a bigger focus on community and collaboration in this year's festival.
Yeah, yeah. And I've really enjoyed connecting with various theatre companies and theatre people. I think that's an important thing for us to do in this town. There's a lot of visual big impact work. If you look at Russell Malafant, which is our big show at the Abbey Theatre, it's like a visual art event almost. There's an absolutely wonderful lighting designer involved, Michael Hulls, who's just got an Olivia Award for his work in lighting design.
Tell me a little bit about Russell Malafant and his work, because I know that there are two very established pieces of his as part of this programme at the Abbey.
Well, once upon a time, Russell Malafant was in Sadler's Wells Royal Ballet, and then he wondered why he was the person wearing a pair of tights standing at the back. So he did a lot of training in Tai Chi and martial arts and contemporary dance and kind of segued via Deviate. You may remember Russell Malafant is in a very famous Deviate film called Dead Dreams of Monochrome Men. There's Russell as a gorgeous young man. And then he started his own company and instantly you had this wonderful collaboration going with this fantastic lighting designer.
And how would you describe his style of choreography?
Well, he's drawing upon all these different influences, like his ballet background, like the martial arts. There's a definite, it's got a very kind of fluid, flowing quality to it. It's not necessarily fast and edgy. I mean, there's quite a variety on stage. And as you mentioned, that we've got two of the sort of Malafant classics. There's Afterlight, which is done, it's almost like a dancer getting swallowed by a whirlpool. It involves some animation work. And that's a kind of homage to Nijinsky, which is very obvious when you see the dancer on stage. And then there's another one, another short, it's an evening of short pieces. And then we've got these two classics and then there's some brand new work. And the other classic piece is called Two, as in T-W-O, and it's a dancer trapped in a box of light, and it's got quite a funky soundtrack, actually. And sometimes this is a piece performed by the famous French ballerina Sylvie Guillaume. We can't get her to Dublin, of course, but we've got someone really good doing it here too. And actually, I'm really pleased that the Malifant programme is also going to Belfast, Limerick and Cork, and comes then on to Dublin. So we feel that's got a nice connection across Ireland.
Music there from Russell Malifant's Two, which is part of the programme at the Abbey Theatre, the composer Andy Cutton. And I think, Julia, Andy Cutton is coming to Dublin as part of this.
He's coming through Dublin to, you know, join in the post-show talk and enjoy the, you know, because I've said to him, you've just got to come and see this at the Abbey. It's going to look fantastic on that stage.
How do you pull a programme like this together, especially in a time of, I suppose, general financial cuts? I know that your Arts Council funding has remained steady for this year, but I presume you don't really get that much opportunity to travel to see work.
Well, I have to pick very carefully where I'm going, you know, although airfares, of course, are much cheaper than they used to be. And I do a lot of what I call hunting and gathering. You know, nowadays, of course, it's great because we have Vimeo and YouTube. So we haven't got a whole load of dance managers queuing up in post offices with jiffy bags, sending DVDs around the world. But obviously, there are certain things that you just absolutely have to see live in order to pick up the real thing and how an audience is responding to particular work. And I would say, you know, just to pick one example from the festival programme, Morley Steinberg's work, Arcane Collective, that is something that you do have to see, you know, in my view, you have to see live. There's a lot of, you know, texture, atmosphere, layering, depth that you just can't get on screen.
And we'd hear from her later in the programme. Shona, there's what looks like a terrific mix, it has to be said, in this year's festival. You've seen, of course, the festival, Dublin Dance Festival, develop over the years, and a lot to look forward to, I think, this year.
Absolutely a lot to look forward to. I think the programme, as usual, as you said at the beginning, is trying to create some kind of potent, magical mix of international work and homegrown, developed talent. And I think that the programme this year strikes a really good balance. I think that as well, I mean, in terms of the international work, I mean, what you want to feel is that, you know, just because you're living in Dublin and not in London or New York or Berlin or somewhere, that you're not seeing what is actually creating waves. You know, where is the collaboration going these days? You know, what's the new experimental, edgy, risky work? And I think that over the 10 years, I think it has been fantastic. We hardly even realise how educated we have become. It's funny. I mean, you know, when you're travelling and you pick up a magazine somewhere, and sometimes I've noticed, you know, they have a small dance thing and I actually recognise the name of the choreographer, whether it's French, you know, downtown New York, Italian, whatever, because I have seen them here. And I think that has been a real success of the festival, certainly in trying to educate audiences. And I think that's very important, so that we create some kind of, you know, aesthetic for ourselves about what dance is, that we become more alert to, and to realise as well that contemporary dance is an enormously wide and very diverse field.
Well, just looking at the programme, it's, you know, this work coming in from Sweden, from Cyprus, Austria, Belgium, France, and then a French-Spanish collaboration, and work from the UK. So a really big spectrum. Deirdre Maloney, what in particular has taken your eye at this year's festival?
Well, I think it's a wonderful, eclectic lineup. And what I'm really fascinated and intrigued by is the Beckett-inspired pieces, actually. And I think, you know, I often think of Beckett as a bit of a choreographer himself. Many of his plays are just stage directions and breath. But also what's interesting is that when you consider that Samuel Beckett was actually very close friends with Lucia Joyce, who was herself a modern dancer in Paris in the 1920s. She was in Raymond Duncan's company. That was the brother of Isadora Duncan, and his cousin Peggy Sinclair, also trained as a modern dancer in Berlin, and he was a big fan of Yeats's plays for dancers. Always said that what he longed for was a sup from the Hawk's Well, being at the Hawk's Well, Yeats's play for dancers. So I think to get the opportunity to see Quad will be extraordinary, and to see what also the kind of theatrical and choreographic collaboration between Gavin Quinn and John Scott, as well as Morley Steinberg's interpretation of the novels. So I think that's going to be really wonderful.
I agree, actually. I'm really intrigued by this, you know, just the whole notion of space and territory and confinement that Beckett is such a master at.
I think this profound way. Yes.
Will be very interesting to see.
Well, we've been talking to the people involved in both those productions, Gavin Quinn and John Scott, who are producing Quad together. And later we'll hear from Morley Steinberg about the Arcane Collective production, I've Returned to Absence. But first, Gavin Quinn of Pan Pan and John Scott of Modern Irish Dance Theatre. Gavin Quinn told me about Quad.
Well, Quad was originally a television play that Beckett did for German television in 1981, and it involves four dancers moving in a strict pattern in a square or quadrilateral, hence the word quad. And I suppose it's a Beckett mime play.
But also very much a movement play. And you did it, I think, Pan Pan did it originally in Edinburgh, during the Edinburgh Festival.
That's right. We did it last year in the Edinburgh International Festival using dancers from Scottish Ballet. And we do it as a lecture demonstration to sort of talk about, you know, artists working with mathematics, and in particular, how, I suppose, in one way, rather tongue-in-cheek, how Beckett got the maths wrong.
John, what do you make of this piece? And it is quite a remarkable piece, even by Beckett standards.
Well, I mean, it is Beckett choreographed in a sense. It's completely pre-choreographed, and it has this rigor to it. And often, sometimes when you are composing a dance, you do notate certain things. My bowing dance, for example, is very rigidly written out, and there's a score, and there are many, many different ways of scoring movement. And I'm fascinated by this, and by getting into it, and by getting into how Beckett perceived the space. And then when you're looking at it, when you bring the score to life, there are all these other preoccupations, where to look, where to go with the eyes. There's this wonderful rhythm, and there's the sense of rhythm in the thing, which is always in the text anyway.
Gavin, because there is a certain lecture element in this production as well, and you have a scientist, mathematician and scientist, almost coming around to the idea that Beckett got the maths wrong.
Well, it starts off with Connor Houghton, who used to be the mathematician in residence at the Science Gallery in Trinity College, and now is a lecturer at Bristol University. And he talks about, I suppose, how Beckett approached mathematics, and how if he had used five dancers instead of four, which is in Quad, that they wouldn't have to repeat any of the sequences. So we will demonstrate the five-dancer version as well.
John Scott and Gavin Quinn there. I also met dancers Morley Steinberg and Oguri of Arcane Collective, who are staging Return to Absence. Quoting Beckett's line, dance first, think later. It's the natural order in the material for the show. Director and one of the founders of Arcane Collective, Morley Steinberg, told me how she drew on Beckett's novels to make the piece.
Well, basically, we read the novels. And instead of doing any kind of literal interpretation, which is very hard to do anything very literally, unless he's specifically staged something, it's more of, with great respect to the character and to the environment, but it is an inspiration from the novels and those emotions that you feel from the characters. That's more what we've pulled upon.
I'm intrigued because I suppose we think of Beckett very much in terms of the power of the word, the power of the written word, of language. But you clearly, within these novels, found strands of imagery and I presume even emotion clearly as well. But I presume as well movement that you could draw on to make a piece that will translate into dance and movement and music.
Well, the material is so incredibly rich. Even images of, let's say, a chicken walking into the kitchen and how he describes that. There's so much movement in that. But to go back to language, he plays with rhythm, with words, and there's like a flow of consciousness. And if you think about movement, you could play upon that that rhythm and internalize it. And a lot of times you just feel like there's words floating. It goes beyond, you can't even make sense. And if you take that rhythm and that floating of words and put it into movement, I think there's great connection there.
Did you, the process, did you read and reread and go away and imagine and come back and work almost in that sort of cyclical way?
Definitely. I read it without wanting to make any notes. And then you reread it and you start to underline passages. But, you know, you might take one scene when Molloy's watching two men walking and, you know, then you just take that scene and you can go off on it. And I don't want to say make your own scene, but, you know, how do you visualize that? And what does it make you feel? And not get caught up in it either, of making an exact scene.
Morley Steinberg of Arcane Collective there. Sean McRaymond, again, the collaboration, we're hearing a lot about music integrated into dance and original music composed. And it's great to see that happening.
I think so as well. I mean, I think one of the startling things about dance is, as we keep saying, it's collaborative genius, if you like, in being able to draw on people who are experimenting and creating in music and lighting and design and text and everything else. But I think music is, of course, a real draw. It's something I think that always speaks to us. And what is interesting is that the music is, again, as diverse as the dance. It's everything from, you know, traditional fiddle to funky hip-hop to classical. It's again, incredibly diverse how you can use, and it ends up being part of the dance. It's not so much that the dancers are dancing rhythmically to the beat in each case, but it creates a whole sound design. It actually is part of creating the expression of the dance.
Well, one of the pieces using music and a piece in progress that can be seen during the festival in the First Look strand is Leave O'Donoghue's Hear Me Sing Your Song, a work that explores personal and cultural identity through movement and music, as Leave O'Donoghue has been telling me.
It's a piece we have been working on since late 2012, and we are in residence at the Dublin Dance Festival here at Dance Ireland. And so we're going to be working on the piece, rehearsing the piece, finishing the piece ahead of its premiere in July at Project Arts Centre.
So themes, I think, of identity, who we are, how we identify ourselves, both in terms perhaps of nationality and much bigger things. Tell me about that and your own family background that I think influenced some of that.
Yes, so I am Irish-Norwegian, a Norwegian mother and Irish father, and I wanted to make a work which I suppose explored that sort of dual heritage or that sort of duality that I was experiencing sort of in my life, sort of not feeling really neither from here nor there. And maybe, yeah, I suppose along the way I've sort of discovered that home isn't really a place for me, it's people. So I became really interested in working with ideas around that identity and sort of place and maybe feeling like a stranger or sort of strange hybrid cultures that come out of that sort of dual heritage that I know other people have experienced with similar black backgrounds. So, yeah, I wanted to bring together a group of different people who I could explore that with, because I think it is quite a universal idea in a way, feeling sort of maybe out of place or searching for something.
Live music and original music, a big part of the show. Cuimhin O'Reilly and Brian O'Connell, I think, both composing music and performing within the show, which must make for a very interesting mix.
Yeah, it was really interesting. And something that I'm interested in working on is everybody involved in the show experiencing the process in the same way. So the musicians, I didn't want to have them sort of at the fringe of the process or sort of, you know, performing at the edge of the stage. I wanted to have them in the fold and in the mix of, you know, everything that the dancers were doing. So very early on in the process, they became involved in all aspects, I guess, of the tasks that we were doing, the research that we were doing. And they, I guess, had the choice to sort of respond to that with movement or with music, or and for the large part, they sort of responded with movement.
Are they good movers?
They actually are. They're fantastic movers, surprisingly. And that just sort of goes to show that dance really is a human thing, you know. It's, you know, and what they were responding with, actually, for me, was almost more interesting, because it was a real human response and not something sort of codified or dancerly. So yeah, they were really fantastic.
Some of the music there from Liam O'Donoghue's piece "Hear Me Sing Your Song" at the Dublin Dance Festival, coming up at the festival. Great to see Liam O'Donoghue and her progress over the years as a choreographer, you know, developing through the last few festivals, and a really exciting choreographer, I think.
Yeah, Liam O'Donoghue is an extraordinary choreographer, and it's great to see the festival as well, you know, supporting these young, up-and-coming choreographers like Liv and Emma Martin Dance as well, who's opening the festival. She also has got a live band on stage in her piece at the project. So it's great, you know, that the festival is giving a platform for these young talents, I think.
Oh, completely. I mean, I think what we've seen is that there have been so many strands developing in the whole dance world here in Ireland. You know, the dance festival has done, I think, extremely well, considering the budget, in bringing, you know, international work, as we were saying. But also, I mean, you've things like Dance House, Dance Ireland, that you know, providing physical support and nurturing places, you know, sheltering people so that they can safely create work, begin to do so. And that's, you know, the Representing Ireland strand allows us to have glimpses of work in progress. I mean, Liv's work in the festival is almost finished, and I think that's been fantastic. But we've seen her in the Representing Ireland, just seeing this, I mean, as a performer and as a choreographer, she's very, very striking. But that territory that she's exploring about between her Norwegian, half Norwegian, half Irish past, you know, is again really fertile territory for a lot of dancers. And that whole thing about space and I mean, Emma Martin's looking at it from a different perspective, you know, that of the outsider. And she is someone who has really kind of grown over the last couple of years, you know, small pieces of work, then larger and larger, and I'm really looking forward to that.
And we'll hear more about the Representing Ireland strand of the festival later in the programme, but I want to hear a little bit about Moving Conversations and that seminar coming up later in the week. But before that, Julie, perhaps you could tell me a little bit about Dance on Film and that strand of the festival. Rain from Belgium and Rosemary Lee's Without, I suppose, central to that.
Yes, we've got a documentary film showing at the Irish Film Institute on Sunday the 25th of May in the afternoon. And this is a piece about Anna Teresa de Keersmacher's work called Rain, which actually was on at the Dublin Dance Festival in 2006, I think.
Extraordinary piece.
And this is, the documentary is about Anna Teresa and a couple of members of her team, her rehearsal director, putting that piece onto Paris Opera Ballet in the context of a great big opera house, and all the strains and stresses and tensions that go with that. You've got these, you know, highly trained Parisian ballet dancers that are sort of like greyhounds, being told to just run across the stage by Anna Teresa, which is a huge challenge for them. I'm not suggesting it's funny. This is all very serious. And then you've got things like Anna Teresa on the phone to her children at home. You know, she's having to spend a lot of time away in Paris dealing with the rehearsals. And it's actually a fascinating piece of work. And I tested it out on some of my chums, because you're always worried, like, oh, is this just for dance people who know who Anna Teresa is? Can we? How is this for the general public? And they said, no. We've been completely gripped by this. This is a wonderful piece of work. Put it on. Then out at Rua Red in Tala, where there's this wonderful gallery space, which is why we headed out in that direction. We've got a 7-screen dance on film installation by Rosemary Lee, who's a choreographer and filmmaker. And this is a project that's come down from Derry. It was part of the 2013 City of Culture Year, in which I may say there were several really important dance projects, which we were, you know, thrilled about. And Rosemary has done a wonderful piece of work called Without that involves citizens of Derry. I think there's over 500 people involved in the film. And they are moving across the landscape of the city through, you know, real and imaginary boundaries. And I think it's, you know, it's a really wonderful artwork. It's on a level with something that Bill Viola could produce. Mm. Everyone thinks, oh, it's community dance. It's, you know, lots of kids just running across a field. But Rosemary is an absolute genius when it comes to getting people to look amazing and particularly amazing on film.
Andrew, you saw her in action in Derry.
I mean, actually, I saw the film, but I was chatting to her about her work at the opening in Rua Red, which is a wonderful space. And I mean, it was just extraordinary. Like, I mean, I'd seen Willie Doherty's film Remains, which is quite chilling and grim. So it was just amazing to see Rosemary's work in the same city, which was so joyous. And, you know, collaborating with the citizens of Derry and Echo Echo Dance Company. And in a very ingenious way, she had these hundreds of people, school children, tea dancers, all just wearing white shirts and, you know, moving through the space in Derry and all shot from the city walls in Derry. And she was telling some funny anecdotes about actually making the piece as well, that, you know, she, you know, became a regular sight in Derry on the city walls. And there she was with her megaphone, you know, directing the dancers to explode, you know, much to the amusement of passers-by. So
not a direction you'd expect to hear proclaimed aloud in Derry.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a wonderful, I mean, it's just so immersive in the space. And when you see these, you know, she zooms in at one point onto the faces of, you know, the children and the women. And it's very, very moving, actually, you know, and often shot against, you know, the graffiti and the more well-known geography of Derry, but in a way reinventing it through dance. And I, you know, personally, I think that this is the real power of contemporary dance, isn't it? You know, that it can traverse all these borders and bring different communities together, and, you know, everybody loves to dance. So
when Rosemary Lee's film work Without is central to a seminar coming up on Wednesday, Moving Conversations, curated by CREATE, the National Development Agency for Collaborative Arts, in partnership with the Dublin Dance Festival. Patrick Fox of CREATE has been telling me about it.
Moving Conversations is a half-day seminar that we have curated as part of the Dublin Dance Festival this year. So we are co-presenting a work with Dublin Dance Festival by Rosemary Lee. It's a piece called Without. It's a 7-screen installation, which is premiered as part of Derry Capital of Culture last year. Rosemary has worked with a cast of over 400 to produce this really kind of sophisticated, innovative work that kind of, I suppose, examines the relationship between an artist and a community in producing contemporary work. So the symposium really was a chance to get under the skin of some of the themes of the work, but also to really explore, what does collaborative dance look like? What does it look like for a dance artist to connect with a non-professional, and how can you make a sophisticated, engaging work in that kind of realm?
Rosemary's piece then is on show at Rua Red in Tallaght. What kind of response have you had to it?
Really fantastic. I mean, it's quite a kind of a languid piece. It's quite evocative. It's, you kind of move into the centre of this 7-screen installation, so you feel quite immersed in this experience, and the kind of narrative of the 7 screens kind of follow and run into one another. And really, it's this takeover of Derry, and Rosemary's positioned on the city walls and has this really high vantage point, and really it's Derry as you've never seen it before, really, taken over by a cast of 400 plus, from skateboarders to school children to older people, dance groups. So it's a really fantastic work that really kind of reimagines the city of Derry.
Patrick Fox, Executive Director of CREATE there. You're listening to Arts Tonight. We're looking ahead to this year's Dublin Dance Festival. Still to come, archiving dance in Ireland, including the 10 years of the Dublin Festival.
RTE Radio 1.
You're listening to Arts Tonight. Dublin Dance Festival celebrates its 10th festival this year. It kicks off tomorrow, as we've been hearing, all kinds of dance riches in there this year. Full details at dublindancefestival.ie. Also full of riches is the National Dance Archive at the University of Limerick, home to the archives of the Dublin Dance Festival and many of Ireland's leading dance companies, and a lot more besides. We've been to Limerick to visit the National Dance Archive, and its director, Anna Maria Heibe, told me all about it.
We were established in 2010 with seed funding from the Arts Council, and we have been collecting since then, and we have about 70 collections so far, and we keep getting new donations every year, which is absolutely brilliant.
And what's the idea behind it, that you make a record of, I suppose, essentially of the history of dance and dance companies in Ireland?
Yes, we are very interested in promoting dance in all its forms, in preserving information relating to dance, maybe encouraging public interest in dance, because I think to a degree dance is still very much a kind of a marginal art form, and it's nice to promote it and make it kind of more accessible, more available, and make people more aware of the dance scene in Ireland, as it were.
So what kind of materials, what do you have here in the archive?
We have absolutely everything and anything. We have costumes, medals and trophies. We have thousands of photographs of recordings of both performances and rehearsals, posters, programs, booklets, flyers, all that sort of material. Also some working notes by choreographers, you know, created during their kind of, you know, work, you know, in producing a new dance work. And some choreographers have also very candidly given us things like correspondence and grant applications and financial accounts, that's just to show the kind of darker side maybe of, you know, how difficult it is for a choreographer to create a new dance work, how expensive it is and how hard it is to get money to have the freedom to create dance.
And who would give the material? I mean, do you have individual dance companies giving you their own archive, for example?
Yes, again, it's very diverse. We have material from dance companies, from individual dancers and choreographers. We also have material just from people who maybe have an interest in dance and have been collecting material over the years. Also, there are some sort of umbrella groups or dance organisations like Dance Ireland or Dance Research Base who have given us material. Likewise, certain events like Dublin Dance Festival, for instance, we have their collection here and they keep adding to that every year, which is kind of nice, makes it a sort of a living archive.
And who would use the archive? I mean, I know that there, you know, there's a dance element to the World Academy here, and as Limerick is, the university is one of the places where you can study dance. So I presume that this is a resource for the students studying dance here in Limerick.
Yes, we get most of our visitors would be students. Also, independent dance researchers, maybe somebody who is doing work on ballet or something like that, wants to see what we have. At present, we're actually dealing with the Irish Folk Museum in Belfast. They're celebrating their 50th anniversary this year, and they are very interested in some of our collections, so they will be exhibiting some of the items that we have collected. So we like to liaise with other archives and other groups like that. And indeed, we're open to anybody. We have an open door policy, so even if, you know, Joe Bloggs, you know, from Limerick wants to come and look at this, we would be delighted to welcome him here.
And as it grows, and obviously it will grow, would you hope at all to have a permanent exhibition, for example, of some of the material you have here?
That would be absolutely brilliant. Like some of our costumes would be great to have those on display. And but that's very much, you know, on the long finger, as it were. But certainly is something that we would like to consider.
And I presume funding would be key to that as well.
Indeed.
Let's have a look at one or two things
that
you have here in the archive, and couple of quite eye-catching. I love this poster.
Irish
Ballet Company.
This is from the first performance of Joan Denise Moriarty's The Playboy of the Western World in New York in April 1979, so going back quite a long way, and it's a lovely sort of an Art Nouveau type, you know, design. So very, very
fantastic
attractive.
Fantastic music by the composed and performed by the Chieftains.
Yes.
Choreography, of course, Joan Denise Moriarty.
That's
wonderful.
That's right.
Decor, as it says, set and yes. Costumes by Patrick Murray. Great poster, really beautiful. The dancers on the sea line. And then Edwards and McLeamore, the Gay Theatre. 42-43.
That's right. This is from the Sarah Payne collection. She was the principal of the Abbey Theatre School of Dance and later set up her own dance company. And she was a very avid theatre goer and interested in what was happening on the dance scene in Ireland. And this is one of the items from her collection.
And signed by the two.
And also, if you open it in the centre, all the performers have signed it as well. So a very
special programme.
Indeed, yeah. Indeed.
And a dancing, a costume,
yes,
a dress.
This is very different from the modern day, the wigs and the makeups. This is a very simple homemade costume. It was made for a lady called Patricia Durkin, who as a young girl was interested in dance. The material was bought in Galway and the dress was embroidered by her sister, who was a nun at the convent in Galway at the time. And we have an adjoining photograph then where the donor is wearing the said costume. So
really simple, green Celtic motif on the front panel. It could hardly be simpler.
Yes, and it's an ideal example now of the type of collection that we have that is donated by a private individual who had an interest in dance in her youth and then maybe moved on to other things but wanted to leave, you know, this little memento behind. And it's wonderful to have.
It's lovely to see. It really is lovely to see. And in the Flamenco Ireland, another poster.
Yes, indeed. As I said, we do try to cover every form of dance, and this is one of the more unusual ones that we have, donated by Joyce Richardson, who runs the only flamenco school in Ireland. When you think about it, if you're an artist and you paint a picture, you can hang it on your wall and it'll stay there for hundreds of years. Likewise, if you write a poem and it's published, it's on your shelf, you can read it 400 years from now. Dance is kind of different. Very often, you create a dance work, it's performed, and then it's gone. Mm. And I have sometimes asked dancers, you know, if you were given the chance to perform a dance that you created 30 years ago, would you be able to recreate it? And the answer usually is no. Mm. It's gone. And I think that's why it's even more important to try and capture this art form as it is made in Ireland today.
Anna Maria Hyba, director of the National Dance Archive at the University of Limerick there. Sean McRaymond, terrific idea, isn't it? The notion of a dance archive, almost blindingly obvious, but like so many of the best ideas, nobody else thought of it until now.
I think probably people thought about it, but very often, you know, you need a combination of doing and thinking as well. I think it's a great idea. I think it's really important, particularly in an art form like dance in Ireland, which isn't immediately obvious as in need of an archive of somewhere, a way of recording, but also because dance in itself, it's such an ephemeral thing, you know, because it's not a printed book or it's not always on film, although we have been talking about that. And that will be a very important way of recording certain ways. But the way that dance has inhabited our lives, I think it's very important to record that.
Deirdre, I know you've been looking at Patrick Scott's connection to the world of contemporary dance, and I suppose that, for example, is a part of dance history in Ireland that should find a place in an archive like this.
Oh yes, absolutely, absolutely. Well, I've been digging in military archives and other unlikely places to find the history of dance, and you know, I was delighted to discover a connection between Patrick Scott and modern dance in 1940s Ireland. And he was only too delighted to be reminded about it and to talk about it. And he told me that in 1939, When he first came to Dublin at the age of 19, he ended up lodging in with the epic ballet Yos, who had brought their epic anti-war ballet, The Green Table, to Dublin. And they were stuck here when the war broke out for 2 weeks. So that was his first introduction to modern dance. And then subsequently through the White Stags, he was brought to Erin O'Brady's Modern Dance Studio and was familiar with her work as well. So I think it's lovely to rediscover this legacy of a connection between visual art and modern dance and contemporary dance, and trace it out and indeed immortalise it in archives and documentaries. It's very important to our sense of who we are as a people, I think.
Completely. I thought one of the interesting things in that interview as well with the director of the archive was that they're going to include grant applications. Because in fact, one of the curious things about dance and dance companies is because, you know, there has been a lot of support for new work. So every company and every choreographer has to suddenly reinvent. So we have no repertory, which is unusual. So we don't see one company doing another choreographer's work. And I think that kind of layering and connecting would be interesting to see. But that's for another time.
Of course, I mean, the financial history of dance and the history of the finance of dance, Julia, I'm sure as well, in relation to the Dublin Dance Festival, would be very interesting as well, and grants. But coming back, I suppose, to the content of the festival, Representing Ireland has been part of the festival for 7 years, and a really interesting showcase for Irish companies making new work. Culture Ireland, an important part of this strand of the festival, and we'll hear about that shortly. But tell us first about this feature, Representing Ireland, and the four showcase pieces this year, Julia.
Well, this is something we've run for several years in the festival now. Very important to showcase this work alongside other Irish work, and then indeed alongside the international programme, so that it's all in one package. Very good for the Irish work to be seen immediately alongside its international peer group. And we work very closely with Dance Ireland and Culture Ireland on bringing Representing Ireland into the programme. We invite, it's an open application process. We're always quite chuffed with the number of applications coming in. I mean, I do feel there's always new work coming through. There's always younger, newer choreographers coming out of, you know, unexpected places, which is really exciting and encouraging. We bring in two international colleagues, dance promoters from elsewhere, to help us select the work, cast a fresh eye on things. And this year we had a French colleague from Chalon-sur-Saône, who I invited actually because his venue has a small space, a medium space and a large space and a decent budget, as far as I can tell. So I was very keen to, and he's a complete Irish fan. You know, he comes on holiday to Ireland and sits in pubs watching dancers in Galway. So I nobbled him, you know, once I'd had this conversation about his Irish holidays. And he was very, very keen immediately on a piece in the this year's programme called The Night of the Big Wind, which is Claffy Christoffy dance. It's four women wearing big boots dealing with a high wind and a storm situation. And it's very, very Irish. It could only have been made here.
Big Wind of 1839. Another was another one, I think, was in the 1950s, but there's an earlier one. And of course, the wind would give great opportunity for dance. But three other very interesting pieces as well, and a kind of Polish-Irish group as well this year.
Yep. Amusingly, there's a woman, a younger choreographer called Dagmara Jerzak, who's done a piece about sleep and falling asleep and the kind of state you get into this while you're sleeping. And last year she was one of the interns in our office who was occasionally slipping off to do rehearsals and get on with her own creative work. So to my amusement, she's in this year's programme, you know, because it was a really strong piece of work and it really stood out as the selection committee were sifting applications. We've also got Laura Murphy, who has a big connection with the Firkin Crane in Cork, in the programme, working with Rob Heaslip, who spends a bit of time in Scotland, a very touching duet. and then a name that people might know Philip Connaughton as a performer, but he is now starting to make his own choreography. And again, we're all very interested to see what he's coming up with.
Now, we featured him on the programme last year, and a really interesting choreographer again. Of course, Culture Ireland, a significant part of this Representing Ireland strand. And Madeline Broughton of Culture Ireland has been telling me about their support for this initiative, which provides an important international showcase window for new Irish dance work.
Some companies like Irish Modern Dance Theatre, with a piece called Actions, for example, that was first seen in a Representing Ireland platform 3 years, has been touring ever since then, really. It's been picked up ever since then. More recently, a company called Israeli Chowdy, who are based down in Tipperary, they showed a short 20-minute excerpt of a piece called Fit Misfit last year, and that's been touring to Mexico, to Brazil. It's going to Dusseldorf this year. There's interest in it from London. Similarly, Aoife McAtamney, again, some are emerging choreographers, Aoife O'Donoghue, have also got great opportunities toured Italy. Aoife recently performed a piece, Softer Swells, in Sweden that she showcased 2 years ago in Representing Ireland. So it does. It can take a year or 2 years for those sort of conversations to result in performances, but it has generated a lot of work for Irish artists, which is brilliant. The other thing I would say is that Representing Ireland is one of, if you like, three platforms that Culture Ireland supports Irish dance in terms of international opportunities. We also do a showcase in Edinburgh every year through Dance Space. So there's two companies, a lovely piece called Swing that Fishamble, which is also in the Dance Festival this year, which Fishamble produced, is in Dance Space, and Cush Kame's piece Missing, which was in Dublin Dance Festival last year, is in Edinburgh. So that's another piece of the dance, international dance promotion. And the other thing I would say is Tanzmesse, which is a 2-year biannual dance showcase in Dusseldorf. Culture Ireland also supports dance artists to go there to present work, and a delegation to promote the work. So Representing Ireland fits in a really nice way. It's our national showcase here, and it takes advantage of the fact that you have this wonderful dance festival programme, and this is another little avenue for people to see work at a different stage of development. But it's also then partnered with these other international more proactive arms of Culture Ireland's showcase programme. So it becomes a fully rounded picture then of work in progress and finished work.
The programmers that come to see the work in Representing Ireland, are they primarily from Europe? Is there much interest from the States, for example?
From both. I mean, obviously, some of it will depend on, for example, Julia, the current director of the Dublin Dance Festival, will have a network of promoters and presenters that she works with on a regular basis. So this year particularly, there is a lot from Europe and the UK. The UK has turned into a very interesting market for Irish dance. Very recently, Junk Ensemble just toured The Falling Song, did a massive UK tour, and similarly Fabulous Beast have done really well in terms of the UK. So we're very keen not to sort of, you know, leapfrog over our nearest neighbour, because there is huge potential there. But there is also a lot of interest from Europe in Irish choreography and dance at the moment. Irish dance artists are becoming more mobile in terms of creating opportunities for themselves within European networks. So that is in turn creating a lot of interest from European presenters in Irish work. And also, there is a cost factor involved. It's obviously, you know, in a climate where resources are tight, it's much, you know, it's cheaper to get work into Europe, and those networks are well established. But there is still interest in the States, and somebody like Irish Modern Dance Theatre and John Scott has created a great sort of appetite for his work in New York in particular. Also, Cush Kame have just presented Swimming With My Mother in the States, which is great as well. It takes a little bit more to really nurture and sustain those relationships. So it still is an important market for us, and we will hopefully have some presenters from the States. But this year, I think the focus is a lot on closer to home. And I think that's probably as it should be at the moment.
Madeline Broughton of Culture Ireland there. Sean McRaymond, just looking, you know, now, with 10 years, a 10th festival, Dublin Dance Festival. Is it a very different dance scene in Ireland and Dublin now compared to what it was like in 2002?
Hard question, really. Yes, it is, in the sense that it is different. It's different for all kinds of reasons. I think that in the years that have elapsed since the festival began, we've seen a strengthening, I think, of support structures that have been created externally, but also internally you know, among the dance community. I mean, I think the dance community anywhere is always much more resilient very often than other art forms. They've always had to be. It's strange because even though it is such an elaborative, collaborative medium, it's always still seen to be slightly on the margins. But the community itself really knows how to work together. And actually, one of the great things I've noticed that this year is that there has been an extraordinary development and, you know, upsurging of dance activity between like Dublin Dances into Spring, where the dance community, with very little money, several companies just said on a very pragmatically, let's, you know, get a theatre, sort this out, you know, and do it. And they did it not only in Dublin, but also they decided to create initiatives to tour. Then you had Galway Dance Days in March. You had activity down in Cork. You've
and
also
Limerick
and
as well.
Limerick as yeah. well now, and mm-hmm. With Jenny Traynor going down mm-hmm. to Limerick. You also have all of these choreographers in residence, dance mm-hmm. artists in residence, in unlikely places. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's all kind of coming together. It's not finished. It's on the move, as you might say, the dance. It's still on the move.
So, I mean, you would say tremendous energy, Deirdre, but I presume as well that the whole funding issue must have an impact, and perhaps more on established companies that are trying to do strong, consistent work than maybe younger companies that can come up and do things initially on smaller budgets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And the new trend now as well with the crowdfunding as well is a very, very interesting initiative. And there's two pieces, isn't there, in the festival, Emma Martin and Leave O'Donoghue, who've both gone to fund it to raise extra money for their shows. Now, what's really interesting about this as well is that it's not just money that you're raising, you're actually developing the audience and you're creating a connection with them, you know, through publicity and marketing. Like if you put 10 euros into a project, you're going to have an extra interest in seeing, you know, what the show is like, how the artist develops. So, you know, these are kind of, I suppose, positive things that have come out of adverse circumstances. But as Shona was saying there, I mean, you know, like they just really are all pulling together, and it's great to see that kind of synergy. But it's tough. I mean,
I think it's tough. I know I sound like Pollyanna, aren't they all marvelous?
Yeah.
Really, to be off, you know,
they
doing
are
all
though.
This work.
Yeah.
But it's the energy that has to go into, you know, getting the money when they could be, you know, really
creating,
doing something. Julia, the audience, over, you know, 3 years on, are you witnessing a growth in an audience for dance? I mean, or do you every festival sit back and think, well, I hope they come in. I hope the booking is there and the audience comes in to fill the theatres. What kind of audience figures are you looking at?
Well, every year I'm kind of standing in the office wailing, you know, nobody's coming, because people in this town book their tickets so late. You know, it's a white knuckle ride up as you're monitoring the sales and chatting to our box office manager at Filmbase in Euster Street, by the way, everyone, if you want to book your tickets. But the audience is growing. You know, the more you have, the more you have is always, if you do any audience surveys about dance, the bigger the critical mass, the bigger the audience. And I do think that the work we've done out on the streets that we've been developing, you know, I've made a point of developing this, you know, it's free. You just turn up. You don't have to plan. You don't have to hang around for the whole thing. You know, just come and get what you like out of it. That's been important in pulling people in. And on the funding issue, you know, we've had a lot of fun and games juggling with the amount of logos that people want us to deploy on pieces of print. You know, it's going to look like the brochure was in danger of just looking like a mosaic because of all the funding that people have to piece together. European Union funding, very, very important for dance. But, you know, there's 6 or 7 logos that come with that.
And they insist that it's
yeah, you know, we're
point.
Having to do a, you know, tiptoe through the minefield of credits that people need.
A whole new image.
Absolutely. Just following up on something you were saying there about the work you've been doing out on the street, I think that it's very important that festivals inhabit a city. And it's one of the other pieces I'm looking forward to is that bodies in urban space where they are physically going to be inhabiting spaces and buildings around the city. And again, you know, in a sort of a way, it's a connection with Rosemary Lee's work, because these are 20 local dancers that have been brought together by Willie Dorner's company, and then they're going to be deployed around the city.
And they'll be unavoidable for people walking by. So, you know, everyone is going to encounter a Dublin Dance Festival in that form.
You know? OK, what a huge amount to look forward to. Thanks to you all, Julia Carruthers, Sean McRaman and Deirdre Mulrooney. The Dublin Dance Festival runs from tomorrow, May the 20th, until the 31st of May. Full details again at dublindancefestival.ie. So much we didn't get to mention: Pony Dance and the music of Uncle Social, for Shambles Swing, Ours Was a Fen Country from England, and much, much more, all starting tomorrow. That's it from us. Back next Monday at 10. Till then, good night.
Arts Tonight, presented by Vincent Woods, was produced by Aileen O'Mara for Digital Audio Productions. You can listen back to that edition of Arts Tonight on the RTE radio player, available online at rte.ie. And the programme is repeated on Wednesday mornings on Through the Night here on RTE Radio 1. You can also podcast it on the website rte.ie/radio1/artstonight.